shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Welcome back to Shit Show Saturdays. It's so Saturday, folks. How are we doing? So as I've shared before, within the Shit Show community, we have all of these small groups that are for different interests or different struggles, one of which being neurodivergent folks. So today you're going to hear from some shit shows, share their experience of being neurodivergent, all of us receiving diagnoses in adulthood. You're going to hear two different conversations. So first I'm talking to two of my shit show dudes and we're talking ADHD. And then I am talking to one of my shit show ladies about autism. So we've talked about this before on the pod. Is this CPTSD or is this ADHD or is this both? Is this CPTSD or is this autism or is it both? There are a ton of overlapping symptoms. For this crowd, for us shit shows, it definitely is complex PTSD. The question is it also one of these other things? Some sort of neurodivergent disorder, or in my case, is this phone addiction? You know, so I got diagnosed with ADHD, mild ADHD, I guess it was like a year and a half ago now, and I'm 99% sure that I don't have ADHD. I'm 99% sure that my phone addiction and technology has literally altered my brain. Because the ADHD symptoms that I present, these are all things that have manifested like over the past, I don't know, 5 years or so. I'm 99% sure that it's what technology has done to my brain. And that is CPTSD related because my phone is a way that I self-medicate. It's a way that I dissociate. It's a coping mechanism for me. So I've been meaning to do an episode on phone addiction, technology addiction. So I'm going to do that soon. So personally, it's hard for me to believe that any sort of neurodivergent disorder could be purely developmental. Like to me, all of these symptoms seem like they most likely were a trauma response or a coping mechanism developed at some point in time. They say that the way that you can tell the difference between ADHD and complex PTSD is that you're born with ADHD or you would be born with autism. And how do we know that that's not just epigenetics, right? Like we have no way of proving that this isn't some sort of a coping mechanism that was developed by our ancestors. So let's get on with the damn show, folks. But first, let's talk about what you need to damn the join shit show, okay? What the hell is taking you so long? Yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever. I know you're out there. I know so many of you are out there right now. Who's going to take the plunge today, right here, right now? Who's going to take their little thumb, go down to the show notes, and damn the join shit show so that you can be a part of this healing community that actually is also quite fun? You're going to enjoy these conversations. I feel like we laughed a lot. You have to be able to find the humor in this healing journey, right? It is just such a grueling process. It is absolutely crucial that we also be able to have a little fun and have a little laugh at ourselves from time to time. And that's what makes this community really special. What makes this the place to be. So just do it. Just do it. Less than a dollar a day. Is your recovery worth a dollar a day to you? I think it is. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Toy Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all.
They say that I should damn the join shit show. They say that that's where people go to heal. They say that I'll feel seen and heard, like I have never felt before. So I'm going to damn the joint right now.
I'm curious, do y'all have diagnosis?
I have mild ADHD.
Okay. I've never been, but I definitely have ADHD. I'm pretty like anti-Western medicine, just because my parents both had bipolar and like schizophrenia when they were manic, and like the laundry list of drugs they were on that just cooks their brains and like into oblivion. And I worked in multiple residential facilities where these doctors were like prescribing, you know, drugs to like, you know, teenagers that are in these dosages that are just insane, with very minimal information on their day-to-day lives and what they really need. And I don't know. I'm like, if there's a way that I can manage my life without using drugs, I want to do that.
Yeah, I got diagnosed as an adult just to like take a break from life for a second and get some help. And I have my own opinions of like the DSM and all of that. I'm not a big fan. And I don't necessarily enjoy being on medication. I'm on non-stimulant now as a means to try, and but I don't even really like that. Like the side effects for what it does is just not.
What is it? Like Strattera?
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't do
it's
anything.
Pretty okay, but it's not great. But on Adderall, I was like a zombie, just like straight up robot sitting at my desk, yeah, 7 hours straight without eating, like resizing boxes in PowerPoint.
Huh. Well, that's kind of interesting. Here's the thing with like the medicine. I don't think that there's anything wrong with taking medication, but I think that you also like that can't just be the only thing, you know, right, especially for us, because it's also a trauma component. But like, yeah, from what I hear, for people who really have ADHD, they say that it's like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like extremely effective for them. And so I take Adderall extended release. So yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that, Sam, because it's like, I've always just wondered, if it doesn't work for people, does that mean it's not ADHD and it's complex PTSD? Or yeah, as you guys know, I think it's my phone that's fucked up my brain.
Yeah, I don't know. My mom got diagnosed and she tried it. She tried Adderall and did not have any luck with it.
Uh-huh.
She didn't really feel like it did much for her. It did too much for me in terms of like, oh, I was on other stuff with it. I think I was on Lexapro at the time as well. And I was just like complete zonked out. I think it's probably a better experience if you get diagnosed earlier, so that's your experience kind of throughout. Because it was like a 180 shift for me in terms of like, I didn't notice it so much at first, but I was 6 months into taking it. And I was like, oh, like I'm not actually the person that I am anymore. And that's not a fun place to be.
So Sam, tell me the story of, because I think you maybe shared it on your Shit Show Saturday, but I don't remember fully. So what led up to you going to get an assessment?
So I did not know what ADHD actually was in terms of how it presented itself until like a couple of months, I think, before I went and got an assessment. And what kind of put the nail in the coffin for me is I was on a trip to visit a friend for a weekend and we were at the beach and somebody just pulled out like a thing of Adderall and was like, who wants one? And I was like, oh, I'll try one, whatever. And so everybody else was like getting lit and having fun and like doing all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting there staring at a seagull like, oh, this is nice. I'm going to read a book. Just chilled out. And I realized that probably was a good indicator that was what it was. And sure enough, I started like going back through my history and it just made my entire life make sense, which is why I dropped the money to like go have someone sign the paper to opine on that.
Did you do like the test thing?
Oh, I absolutely was like doing the whole Googling, like, do I have ADHD and all that. I had prepared a document before I met with a psychiatrist to be like, here's how it's shown up in my life. I've talked through it, answered all the questions, and it was a resounding yes. It just, I think that my presentation of it was never like outwardly very like spastic or whatever it is that people have when it, like the physical aspects of it, because of the trauma piece of it was being so like monitored as a child in terms of how I behaved, that it was all very internal. So like I have a really hungry brain, and that my brain is constantly like just gnawing on stuff, trying to work things out and do all this kind of stuff. So
you said that you didn't really understand what ADHD was. Like, what did you think initially? And then what did you learn?
Yeah, I had like the typical idea of what like an elementary school boy.
Who can't sit in his chair. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't sit in your chair. You're running around and all this kind of stuff. And to some extent, like I had a really hard time at work. I've worked from home my entire career, sitting more than like 15 minutes doing something without like getting up and taking a break or like getting a cup of coffee or any of this. And I guess because I didn't feel like I presented as hyperactive, like that's all I knew it to be, was like externally hyperactive. I did not understand it to be like internal hyperactivity and all of the other kind of things that come along with it, which were all things that I just thought made me broken and had me fucked up. So
what about like as a kid? Like, did you now, what was your childhood like as far as this stuff?
That was another thing too, is I did great in school up until probably middle school, high school. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time like outside as a kid playing and stuff. And I used to just like spin around in the house and like jump around and do all this kind of stuff. But I was like shamed for it. And so that kind of went away after a while. I spent a lot of time by myself, like in my room, but it very much showed up, I think, in terms of school. Like my high school career was, I made a game out of homework where I would wait to do it until the day of, and I would just try and cram in as much of it as I could before the class got there. And so I graduated like number 14 in my class, but if I had been able to sit and do homework, I would have been even better off, because I got like kind of bad grades. Cause I remember, especially in like algebra 2, my teacher took me aside and she was like, you know what you're doing and you do really great on tests and stuff, but you never turn in homework. Like, you should really get on that. Mm-hmm. And I just never understood why I could not get myself to do it. So,
yeah. So what about you, Josh? What led you down the path to thinking that you had ADHD?
I have always been like a space cadet. I'm more like the attention piece has definitely always been more my issue. I was always like the last one in the class to finish a test all throughout college. Struggled to get homework done. Just like a lot of executive functioning skills, like waking up on time, cleaning my room, you know, like just a lot of responsibility things, even down to like my clothes, you know, like being well-groomed and prepared. It's like all the things surrounding responsibility, it's like my brain is just elsewhere. But then there is this definitely an underlying hyperactivity within all of that, that I'm like always restless. So yeah, my parents didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so Anne had a distrust with doctors as well. And so I think if I was in another family, I probably would have gotten diagnosed pretty early on and probably had a lot more interventions. But yeah, that isn't how the cookie crumbled. So yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was going to show you this. Let's see here. There's this PTSD, ADHD, like overlap thing.
I definitely think that most of my ADHD symptoms are rooted in trauma and parts. Like inattention is dissociation. You know, it's parts taking my attention away from something into something else is like a self-soothing in a lot of ways.
There's no such thing as ADHD not being PTSD, I think. I don't think there's any way. Don't you?
I was going to say that quote but the statistic around kids with ADHD receiving something like tens of thousands and more negative remarks against them in their childhood. Just that in and of itself, I think is trauma of having a hard time and then getting the negative reinforcement of that is just layering it with all sorts of just horrible stuff.
I mean, the biggest piece of this, like, I think I've been able to manage the inattentiveness throughout my life until after I graduated and I went through some like events that led to me, you know, having again, like undiagnosed PTSD and being completely like separate from my body. And then that developed into a lot of sensory issues, like that I get sensory overload a lot. And that wasn't the case for me as a kid. Like I've always had vestibular issues, which is the inability for my brain to understand where I am in space and then recalibrate. And so I like always would get like car sick, or like anytime I'm like moving around a lot, I get kind of nauseous. So that I had that, but like nowadays, I mean, it's a daily struggle where I'm like, I have light sensitivity, sound sensitivity. And that's, I think, all trauma related, that just kind of shot a lot of my sensory systems, because like my amygdala's on high alert all the freaking time, you know? And it's like that level of tolerance that I should have, my brain's just deteriorated and like needs rest. And so my brain will tell me a lot more than what it used to that I need to chill, because I can't keep at this pace.
Well, with the like hypersensitivity to noise, like one of my, because that's the other thing too, is like it gives us like superpowers also. Like I can be in the loudest restaurant ever and nobody can even tell that there's music on, and I can identify the song.
Yeah.
And I also like conversation. I think what it stems from is like, you know, when I'm listening to my parents fight, like I always wanted to hear what was going on, always. Mm-hmm. But and that it could also be there's OCD too.
Well, it's different for me. Like when I'm in like a big room of people, I definitely notice the noise, but I'm like sensing everybody's energies and like their like faces and what they're doing and what they're potentially what they're thinking about. Because I was always having to understand the emotional presence or
like the temperature.
Yeah. Not just in the room, but within each person, to make sure that like I could maneuver that and not upset anyone.
The temperature?
The temperature. The emotional.
Is that your superpower?
I can read emotional temperatures.
I wonder if like, because you guys know about my feet washing thing, like I only do it once a night now, but I wash my feet twice every night for years. Well, how old this go?
Didn't know about that.
Yeah. It started like when I was one time I lived in Florida, my feet were dirty, like at the end of the day. And so I just washed my feet, you know, and then there was like one day where I had socks on the whole day, but I just, you know, had to wash my feet. And then one day I did it twice, and then I just did it twice every night for like 10 years. Now I just only do it once. But I have like OCD type stuff around like bedtime too, like with peeing. I just have like weird OCD things about like related to bedtime.
I didn't realize how like maybe weird this was, but like I would always try and line things up when I'm walking down a hall or like on the down a sidewalk. I'm like lining everything up everywhere I go. You do the same thing?
Yeah, with my cookie dough ice cream. When I would eat my cookie dough as a kid, I would take all of the cookie doughs, put them on a napkin, and then when I finished the ice cream, I would eat them from smallest to largest. What about like walking on cracks or like certain kind of things?
Yeah,
like
no,
that?
Like I would have to. I mean, I don't think there was a level of like superstition around it. It was more just like
entertainment. It was entertainment for me, I think.
Well, I think there was a level of fear to it to me, though. It wasn't superstitious, but it was like, if I don't do this, then there was this underlying fear. If I don't do this, then I don't know what's going to happen. But like, it was just a compulsion, you know?
I have that with like counting things. I used to have to count my steps, like especially stairs or the distance between two points. I'm constantly counting. And in terms of like food stuff, counting, like if I had a pack of candy, I would have to count it and I'd have to separate it by color. And then I'd have to go in a specific order, just very much like, I don't know what I thought would happen if I didn't do it. It was definitely compulsion.
I would have to like make them into their, like if it's like Jiggy Fruits, you guys remember that candy?
Yeah,
I'd have to like
beat
the different colors. And so I always had to use a pencil, because my writing mistakes were like literally every sentence. And so whenever I'd use a pen, I'd always have to mark out like so much of my paperwork, because I would misspell things or not say it now, or wanted it and I'd just scratch it out. And so like whenever I had to just do a final draft in pen, like it was a task. Or like, if this was weird, if I hurt this part of my left arm, I would have to like hurt the other side of my right arm, like the same part, for there to deal with.
That's so good. I love that. That's so good. Come on. Well, I'm laughing because we're such fucking weirdos. You know, it's so good. It's so funny. I love that. I have to make sure my other arm got hurt now. Gotta balance it out, baby. Equality. I wasn't pull up the traits and see what each of us feels like we struggle with the most in the present. I mean, all of these inattentiveness ones are like, are me, with the exception of being unable to, oh, appearing to be unable to listen. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, that's weird.
What does that mean? Like that I am listening, but other people don't think I am?
I can't like look at people when they're talking if I want to understand what they're saying. Like I have to avert my eyes, but it's almost too much information coming in to like see the face and the words at the same time. So I hate that these are always in the sense of like how another person experiences you, because I think that's probably what it is like not paying attention comes across as not listening. But I know for me personally, like I have to like look away to hear what's being said, or it just does not process.
What the fuck is appearing forgetful or losing things? Like I'm not appearing to lose things. Who appears to lose things that aren't actually losing things?
I have to, I can look, I think that's probably more, it is somewhat more of a learned skill in like doing therapy with people where I have to maintain eye contact and like an empathy level, you know? But when I'm trying to, when it comes down to, and I did it right now, whenever I have to communicate something, I can't look at them in the eye like almost ever. I have to formulate it looking elsewhere.
I'm looking down here. I got some of these too. Can't sit still.
Yeah, I was never able to sit still.
So like with my interviews, you know, sometimes if I'm trying to make a clip and I want to like piece some pieces together, it's like I can't do it because it's like the first part of it is here. And then when I go ahead, the next one in my head's like over here and everybody else is like in the same location. Stay still. All right. Anything else of note with these? Any stories or any of these things speak out to you? I say for me, what causes me the most pain would be being able to stick to tasks that are tedious or time consuming.
Yeah, I can't finish things.
Are you all,
I'm so bogged down. I'm like, I need to walk away.
Are you all ready for a story? Okay, so I've always been a fidgeter. Like I always have something in my hands. Like that, usually nowadays, it's just the pen. Like I'm always like playing with a pen. Always something I have to be in my hands. And in high school, I had like the lanyard on like the end of my, you know, that was attached to my keys. And it was like one of those that was like, you know, a school lanyard that was like probably a foot and a half long, maybe 2 feet. And I would always be swinging it around my finger. And like I would all the time, I'd just be hitting myself in the face or something. And I didn't really care because it's myself, you know. And then like all my best friends are like, would always give me crap about it. And like, I'd like hit them and they get upset. And they was like, bro, you got to stop doing this, man. And then one day we're in Taco Bell and I'm like swinging. And by that time, like I had a bunch of keys. So this thing was pretty heavy and I'm like yanking around and up comes this 3-year-old just like running away from his mom. And it nailed him in the face and knocked him over. And I was just like, oh my God, I felt so bad. My friends were all just, Josh. And I had to apologize, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. So that I like literally took the lanyard off and threw it away. And I was like, okay, I have to stop. This has to end. I can't hurt any more children.
Killing babies. Had your kids, folks.
Yeah.
Okay, so what causes y'all the most pain today?
Mine's definitely not being able to stick to tasks and issues. I'm also really fidgety. I think about my childhood and like, there's a TikTok that like sums it up really well. There's a guy who's like talking to a camera and he accidentally flips the camera around and he has a pair of scissors like looped around each of his big toes and is like playing with them. And then he gets like really embarrassed. I was constantly just like had something in my hand, whether it be like something off the coffee table. Like I remember catching myself playing with a pair of pliers and like not even remember picking it up. And that's very much, I don't think that I was like jumping around, but I'm always like, I get in trouble in stores for touching everything. Just very.
Oh, you're handsy.
I like that. Damn. We love consent.
Butterfingers. Oh, butterfingers over there.
The difficulty organizing tasks. I finally had to break down and buy pads specifically for to-do lists because I keep a notebook and I would try and keep a to-do list, but I could not stay to the same one. I would like get halfway through one and then like flip the page and have to start a new one. And without like a to-do list that I can mark off, work is miserable. Like I get nothing done. I get in trouble all the time. So now I have like a designated pad for any tasks that have to get done that I have to like write down and mark off, or else I just, it doesn't happen.
No shit. I don't make it halfway through. I literally make like 2 pages into the notebook. And so I have like 8 notebooks probably over there. And then I finally got like this, I'm incapable of using it more than like 2 days in a row.
I like cannot stand like notes, note taking, paperwork, all of that stuff. But like that was the main reason. So I had an undergrad in counseling. So like, that was the main reason I didn't get licensed, was because I was like, I just can't manage all that paperwork and all that headiness and all that focus and concentration that goes into that. Because like schoolwork was always so laborious for me. I was like, which is why I do more energy work now. So like, I don't have to do all that kind of more the legal side of things, but I can still do like the hard work, you know. I just have to, and then I do part-time like construction type stuff. So I work with my hands. So like I've had to kind of advocate for myself in that way with the jobs that I take. So it's like I'm not having to just, I can appeal to my strengths within my work and not appeal to my like weaknesses, knowing that that's something I struggle with. And like, I really like Mike Galkin, who's an IFS, like really seasoned IFS therapist and trainer. And we started to not like attribute things that you struggle with as moral failures, but just as like issues, you know? And I think that that was something that I was just like, there's got to be something morally wrong with me here that I'm not able to do this. And there was just like this driving shame around not being able to do things. And just kind of like giving that up gave me so much more freedom just to be able to be myself. Look at it as more of like, my brain just functions differently and that's okay. And I can orient my life around that instead of always driving to be kind of make myself better in this area where that energy could be used in a lot of other ways. It's more helpful.
Do you guys both have iPhones?
Yes.
Okay. I want you to go into your notes and tell me how many notes you have on your phone.
Oh, that's
notes. Well, I don't really use notes.
Okay. Well, then you don't count.
What's the app called? Is it just
notes?
Why is it showing up on my phone? Oh, it's because I've reached my time limit. I had to set a time limit on my phone after 9 o'clock.
You actually abide to it?
No, I constantly say ignore. Oh, there's just tons. Like, it just goes on forever.
Does it say down at the bottom? Mine says at the bottom of the, when you get up at the top.
Oh, 90.
90? Well, yeah. Guess what? Let's see.
I think mine's got like 100 and something.
Okay. Well, if you can see
Do you have like a few thousand?
Do you see it?
No.
The bit number.
It's 1,053.
Wow.
That's what I mean. Oh my God. You know, it's like, that's the thing too. I start lists and I never return to them.
Yeah.
I never can stick with one list.
But that's the thing. I enjoy making the list. I just don't enjoy like actually doing the things.
So what are some things that like you feel have helped you as, you know, like with dealing with this? Like, Sam, you obviously just shared about the like to-do lists. Are there any other things that you, I mean, obviously you take medication, but any others like tools that you've used that help with this stuff?
Yeah, I think going back to the point about like recognizing that it is just an inherent aspect of self and not like a moral failing was like a big turning point in life, because that gives you the freedom to say, oh, there's nothing wrong. This is just what it is. And from there, I kind of just like the world opened up a little bit and I stopped being so judgmental. I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that I naturally get overwhelmed by tasks because I see not only like the big picture of what needs to be accomplished, but every single like step that has to be taken to get there. And if I do not break it down into like the smallest little chunks, manageable bits of it, then I can't even start. I get paralyzed with just like overwhelm. And so for me, like the checklist, writing down like the smallest like bit, and then actually taking the action of crossing it out when I'm done is like a hit of dopamine. And that like fuels me on to the next thing. And so doing that and then just being really like having a lot of grace with self of like, if I'm going after cleaning my kitchen and I only get halfway done, that's better than no way done. And so, you know, celebrate those small victories as well. It's kind of been the biggest motivator, is breaking it down into tiny, tiny, tiny digestible chunks and then celebrating every little bit along the way has been like life-changing in terms of being able to get myself to stick to something and to do it.
I was having ChatGPT help me with that. I wanted to make related to Barb's workshop. Like I had to like come up with like a marketing plan. You know, I like told it that I had to do it, you know, in small pieces. I've been cultivating my relationship with this one. He's Kiki. I told the ChatGPT that it's Kiki. And like I actually had to like scold him. Like I'm not kidding. Let me see. I asked him to get quotes for me from the transcript of the episode. Like I provided the whole transcript and then he like gave me the quotes. We'll call him a he, even though he's Kiki. And so I told him like, find the most powerful quotes that are in here. And then he sent them to me. And then this one, I was like, I can't find where this is from. Like, is this from like the transcript? And he was like, no, you know, I made them up. And I was like, well, I told you to use it directly from the transcript. He was like, my apologies, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so then he goes and does it again. And then I'm like, is number 6 in the transcript? It's like, no, I'm sorry. Number 6 is not in the transcript. And I was just like, what in the hell is going on here, dude? Like, and he was like, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I was like, but can you please explain the logic to me of why you would think that that would be okay?
This is why I don't fear AI taking over, because they're just as dumb as we are.
Random fun fact while you're looking at that. Kiki was the first girl that I expressed that I liked her, and she rejected me.
So. Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Third grade, man.
Rough times.
Rough times.
I'll say for me, what really helps is whenever I start my day and I do the routine that I should be doing every day, but do like twice a week, you know, like pray a little bit, meditate, do some stretching, that ends up making like a huge impact on how my day goes.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
Do you shit shows ever feel like you're just too damn busy to eat healthy? So I used to feel this way. Every day I would wake up with the intention of eating clean, and before you know it, it's 10:30 p.m., I'm in my bed, and I'm eating smart food popcorn. That is, until I found the perfect solution. Meal kits from Sunbasket. No matter what your lifestyle is, Sunbasket caters to your kind of healthy. Every single recipe is shit show proof, so pre-measured, pre-proportioned, easy to prepare. I most recently made the seared Alaskan halibut with mashed potatoes and herb brown butter parmesan sauce, and it was damn good. And for you shit shows out there who only know how to work a microwave, Sunbasket also has pre-made meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes. No prep, no mess. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 off your first 4 deliveries. That is sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your very first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Something that I noticed whenever I was in college that, like, I kind of noticed that I always did, but didn't really realize what I was doing, didn't, like, brought clarity, was I noticed I'm a very, like, value-centric person. Like, I'm either motivated through fear of getting in trouble or fear of punishment, or I'm motivated by, like, a sense of duty based on my value that I have to a thing. And so I started, like, if there's something, you know, I think we're my freshman and sophomore year run during all the base level courses, like taking trig for counseling, you know, it's like, it doesn't, I see it since I said, it's just like, I'm never going to use this. This is stupid. But like just finding some way that that fits within my value system, like that it's honorable to do this, like that would give me a boost to be able to do the thing. It's like, and find how it matches up with my values. So that's something I still do. I think a lot of it's like subconscious now, but yeah, definitely taking out the bite-sized pieces. That's definitely a big for me as well. What I can get very quickly overwhelmed.
Will you get like fixated on things?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
like, definitely.
And it's so hard to to walk away. But like I've been
yeah,
getting better with that. Like when I find that I'm going into that, I've been better about walking away. But sometimes it's so hard to like get out of it, you know, and then you just like you have nothing at the end of it. And then you feel like so much shame because you just fucking wasted a bunch of time on a task that you tell yourself should have taken you 5 minutes. You know, it's like, fuck me.
I never did, kind of perfectionist that I am, like I never had rough drafts. I couldn't write a rough draft.
Oh, yeah.
Had to be the final draft. Like it had to come out as it is. You know, like I couldn't just like write out random thoughts and then make it, you know, cohesive. Like I had to come out as the final draft, mm-hmm. Which is a lot of freaking pressure to put on yourself.
I would do the same thing, and then I would never allow myself to reread it to make sure, like proofread it.
Oh, really?
I would end up getting in trouble. So getting in trouble being that I would just continue working on it forever. But same thing, like there was no rough draft ever. It was always, this is the draft.
The draft. This is it.
This be it.
I was the only person I knew that did that. So it's nice to hear.
Oh, I mean, I never told anyone, so.
Right? Who does that?
Thinking about fixations, I have stints where I go like 6 months obsessed with just like random things.
Like a hobby?
Yeah. And I like deep dive and I get to know way too much about it. And then
like RFS.
Yeah, there you go. This whole healing journey has been very much that. Like it's the only thing I think about.
Yeah.
Like the only thing going on in my life. Just constantly. And that's the thing too, is that's a dangerous one because getting to know yourself, there's like a never ending well of knowledge to like,
yeah,
it's tough. And then you can't relate to people.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it not self-aware or what?
Huh? Because they're not? Yeah.
Yeah. Do y'all get that way with songs? Like, do you listen to songs over and over again? Like, the same one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much that way.
The one thing that we failed to mention is as far as just the role technology has played into this. You know, like,
yeah,
that's why this is so much more prevalent with people, because they're just totally like fucking up our brains and causing people to have a 2 second attention span, you know, almost in kind of like a cruel kind of way. It kind of keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Oh, that was the thing I was going to say that I noticed improvement of. One of the other things I noticed is that when I pray, and I never used to have this issue, I could like stay on track in my head. But then it, like, for the past couple of years, it's like I lose my train of thought 6 seconds into praying. And then all of a sudden I realize I've spaced out again. But the past like week, I've actually been able to go straight through. The task switching, I'm really a victim to that. Do you guys do that shit?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, constantly.
Mm-hmm. I have a hard time getting out of my car. I have to go like get on my phone and do a couple of things to like get enough to like open the door and get out. And somebody called me on it one time. They're like, you can't just get in the car and go. You have to like plan your phone. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. Like,
I do the same fucking thing. Is it more so when you first are getting in the car or when you arrive?
Well, when you get in the car, you have to like either find the music or the podcast you're going to listen to and then like put it in the map or whatever you need if that's something you got to do. And then you go. So that, I think that front, it's still there, but it's not as like distracting. When I get home, it is a solid like 10, 15 mm-hmm. minutes.
I'm the same way. Mm. Just doing like stupid shit.
Yep. It's like ritual.
Yep.
Yeah. I wonder what that's about.
I'm not like that with car things. I think I'm more like that around like sleep.
I think it's a dopamine thing. Like, it's your brain can't calm down until there's enough dopamine in it. And so if you're having to like go and get a few hits before you can like focus enough to like make a big move to go and do something, I think that's because whenever I'm medicated, it's much easier. Like the wall is not as thick. I can like get through the wall faster versus unmedicated. It's like moving a fucking mountain to try and start a task that I don't really want to do. And I think getting out of the car is one of those things.
Well, that's why I had that guy that one time when I was at the Walmart parking lot, that like the creepy guy that hit on me in the parking lot, because I was just sitting there for like 10 minutes. Maybe he thought it was like a horror or something, you know? You busy? I said, yeah, I'm spaced out on my phone. Okay, any closing comments?
I would just like to say that I'm 77 days sober from TikTok. That ruined my life. I would get done with work and I would just sit myself on the couch and I would be there until bedtime. And that is truly like you're talking about the way technology ruins us. That is absolutely ruinous. I benefit from phone detoxes quite often, but I don't know. I think summing it back up, not running around in a tangent. I think it's just it's been such a great thing to understand mm-hmm. yourself through that lens. I think especially like where trauma and neurodivergence meet is like that shame aspect and the feeling of like being an alien or like feeling like you're wrong in some way. And there really is a freedom in knowing kind of what's up, whether that is like your brain is just developmentally different or all these terrible things happen to you over a long period of time. And that's why life is so much harder. And for me, it kind of met in the middle. And that has been like a huge catalyst for change in my life. And so I think like the big takeaway is just to, you know, be patient with yourself and be kind to yourself always, because most people are not, I think lazy is a horrible word. We're not any of that. We are all just doing our best. And if your best looks different than what everybody else is doing, then there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah. That was something I struggled with a lot. Cause like my brother and my dad, and like a lot of people in my life just called me lazy all the time growing up. And that's something I had to really heal from. I'm like, I'm not lazy. But I think, I don't know, something I wish, it's really nice to have camaraderie around, you know, and know you're not the only one. And then know it's not a moral issue. I just wish even people in my life had more of a grid and an understanding and more of an awareness of like.
Well, I guess that's a question I didn't ask. That might be interesting. How is it? Yeah. Has it impacted, like if it's impacted relationships?
I think something that I constantly struggle with is like people thinking like, you know, I'm like, if I don't clean my dishes or like if my roommates or if I, you know, show up late to something or, you know, like any of the things that kind of give little rubs in a relationship, it's not that I like don't care about you. It's not that I'm like not thinking about you. there's just a lot going on, you know, in my head. And I think a lot of it's frustrating when people take those things personally when I don't intend them to. And it's that's something I've had to navigate a lot that to this day is still hard, because it's like I should, you know, my inner critics, you know, like I should do that, you know, I should have that, you know, and that pressure is still like intense on me. They're like, I'm, you know, almost 35 years old. I should have this shit together by now. Okay. And I have to like have self-compassion in those spaces because people around me, unfortunately, aren't going to a lot of the time. Like I have some choice people that don't, that I really honor and respect and trust, but you know, the vast majority of people in my experience just don't have that level of compassion or understanding or ear to listen to what's really going on.
Yeah.
So,
well, for me, it's been constantly having to be on my phone and people thinking that that means I don't like them or I'm not interested in them. And then it's hurtful. It's obviously not like my intention, you know, but that's part of it too, of like, I really need to get a handle on this phone stuff because it's hurting people. What about you, Sam?
I would say that I think the biggest impact for me, I think people of a neurodivergent kind of color all clump together or tend to, and that tends to bring along with it like people with addiction issues and very much the quintessential like adult child personality. And so it just in a way seeps into every aspect of relationships in terms of the way you interact. Like codependence is a big thing, and the shame that people carry, whether it's your shame or their shame, and how those things interact. A lot of most of my close friends in some way have had similar experiences, and it makes those relationships really rich, and that there's a lot of relatability, but it also makes them very difficult because there's a lot of places where you can come to blows and just like get really, you know, it gets messy. And so I think that's it. It's the relationships I have in my life are ones that I treasure because they are really special and they're really deep, but they're also really challenging. And a lot of times just don't work out, and it gets messy a lot.
Well, it's been a pleasure, my Atlanta gentleman.
Tell me the story that led you to thinking that you had autism.
I think, well, first of all, TikTok. Like, I feel like TikTok oddly has brought me to like a lot of realizations, just because people are on there talking about their actual experiences without a lot of filter or trying to sell something, right? And I was working through sort of processing some unresolved trauma from my childhood. And as I was doing that work, it's hard to describe, but I know that other people experience this too, because I've said this and other people are like, oh yeah, totally. It was like I would do all this healing work, and a lot of it was in group settings, kind of like in our group, where it's like you share stories and there's things that connect and you're like, oh my God, I totally relate. And then sometimes the information is in the things you can't relate to. So people in my like group therapy or group whatever, group coaching, group life coaching, whatever, would have similar experiences, go through similar processes, and then have some sort of evidence that they were healing, right? Like, oh, I'm not so anxious anymore, or I'm not so reactive anymore, or I used to not be able to handle this situation, but now I can. And I would feel like, oh no, those things still bother me. Mm-hmm. Like here I am healing and processing and doing all these things. And sure, my relationship with my parents is better, but I still can't stand the sound of people chewing. Like, what is wrong with me? And and then I ended up with like a, I want to say she was like a trauma coach. She wasn't really a therapist. She wasn't working as a therapist in that role. And she had a son who had ADHD. And she kept saying like, oh, that's probably part of your neurodivergence. And I was like, I'm not neurodivergent. What are you talking about? And so then I probably started searching things, and then TikTok started showing me things. And then it was just like, oh, that makes sense. And like one of the key things when you start getting evaluated for autism, and I don't know if you had this experience with ADHD, but it's like, they have to be things that happened throughout your entire life. Like, it's not just something like you experienced something in your life, like a trauma or whatever, and then you started having these experiences. You have to be able to recall that you've always been that way. I will say that's hard to do if you have like lifelong childhood complex PTSD, but there were definitely things that, like, I don't think that's related to trauma. Like the fact that I've never been able to wear like tights. I don't think that's related to trauma. I think it's a sensory issue. So then it kind of came from there. And like, I did so much research on my own. By the time I had an evaluation, I already knew. Like, I was like, I'm pretty solid on this.
Well, that's why I don't think I have ADHD. And I think it's like phone addiction, because these things didn't happen until like the past, you know, however many years. So when did you realize it was more of a... Because like when you hear neurodivergent, you think ADHD probably initially, right? And what was it that made you think, oh, maybe this is actually autism?
I don't know. I honestly, like, it sounds so silly to me now thinking about it, but it was probably just...
the sensory stuff?
Well, it was more like, okay, also an autistic trait is like going down a rabbit hole of like crazy information gathering. All I did was research this, read about it, get books, listen to, like, follow TikTokers and listen to every single one of their posts. And, you know, then there would be people who were like, I have ADHD and autism, or like, this is the difference between ADHD and autism. My youngest had a diagnosis of ADHD, but we always knew something else was going on, and mm-hmm. which now we think is autism, but she doesn't have a diagnosis. And so she's 17, and this was like, what, 2-3 years ago? So I would have conversations with her, like, does this happen to you? Does this happen to you? And she's like, oh yeah, that's totally an autism thing. She knew more about it than I did. So I think that was really what it was. It was just like so many things resonated that it just became so obvious to me. Like, it was obvious. Like, someone turned a light switch on and things that never made sense before suddenly made sense within that context.
I know that it can present differently in women. What are some other symptoms that you have that maybe some people wouldn't consider or would have thought would have been autism traits or symptoms?
I think my experience has been, and like with other people that I know, and I think this is more common with women, is like, because we are trying to fit into society the way we're supposed to, it's a lot of internal things. So like, typically, you know, with boys, it's like, oh, they line up their trains by color and, you know, all these like stereotypical things. And the things I could relate to were more internal, like always trying to figure out how I'm supposed to behave or act in social settings, and not like, not in the way that like other people do.
Like, how?
So, like, I didn't know. I remember learning at a certain age that like you were supposed to look at people's eyes when you talked to them. And then I remember being really horrified when I realized I don't do that. I look at their mouths, because that's where the noise comes from. Like, that makes sense, right? Like, why would you look at someone's eyes? Their eyes aren't talking, their mouth is. And I remember thinking, oh shit, I bet people notice I'm not looking at their eyes. And then another common thing that happens is like, once you figure out like you're supposed to look at people's eyes, like we like autistic women typically don't know how to do that right. Like, am I looking too long? There's like this internal dialogue constantly. Like, am I looking too long?
Do I look at one eye? Which eye do I look at? Do I switch it back and forth?
Right. Is it time to look away? Did I look away too long? Like, yeah, the internal dialogue thing too, I think, sort of a crossover with ADHD, but there's like always a million things going on up there. But that was a big one for me. I realized I had my whole life was like, how are the other kids behaving in the room? And how do I do that? And then I would do it and it would still be fucking awkward.
Weird.
Like, bumping into things is also, I didn't realize that was a thing. Like,
oh, is it?
Yeah, I think that also might be an ADHD thing. But like, I remember at a really young age, like, I would fall downstairs, like a full set of stairs, not like a couple steps. My neighbors had this, their house was like, you had to go upstairs to get to their house, no matter how you went in. And there was either the wood stairs or the carpeted stairs. And I remember when I would walk down them, I would like, okay, are we going to risk the wood stairs? And I clearly have this memory of being like 3 or 4 and falling down the carpeted stairs and having this thought in my mind of, here we go again.
What's that about?
What is the word for it? It has something to do with like your sense of your body in the space you're in.
Okay.
Shit, I can't remember what the term is. Okay, I have to look it up because now I can't remember. Shit, what is it called?
Spatial.
But it's a thing. It's like a sense of like your brain is taking in so much information all the time. Like I forget what it is. It's like autistic people process like, I don't know what the number is. Let's say I'm gonna make it up 40 times more as neurotypical people. That number is not right, but but it's like there's so much going on all the time that sometimes you don't pick up on the things I think neurotypical people have the bandwidth to pick up on. Like each foot needs to stare.
Yeah, foot stare. You just need to put you in a bubble. Here's a question for you. Was it a harder pill to swallow that you had complex trauma and that you were an adult child than having autism? Like how did you respond like emotionally to that compared to learning you had complex PTSD?
I feel like it was just like another layer of the onion, you know? Yeah. It was like...
Was there any resistance to like accepting it?
Not really.
That's good.
Not really. I think once, you know, I feel like I suppressed so many things, so many feelings that like I knew, I remember about and I think I might've said this in our last interview, like I remember feeling like, if I open this up, whatever this is, if I look inside, I'm gonna break shit. It's gonna be awful and painful and I'm not ready. And so I knew that like once I cracked open that first peel of the onion, that like I didn't know what I was gonna find and that I was gonna have to keep going. Like there's no not going and like maybe I'll do it for the rest of my life. But
there's no dipping a toe in the pond.
Yeah, it's like I can't, I have maxed out on being able to suppress anything. And so I think almost now I'm at the point where like, if you threw something else at me, like if a month from now I discover there's something else I haven't resolved, I'd be like, okay.
Cool.
I think the hard thing was realizing that like, there's trauma that came, like it's complex for a reason. There's trauma that came from the way I was parented. There's trauma that came from the way I responded to the way I was parented. And there's trauma from just being a neurodivergent child that wasn't getting recognized what she needed.
Yeah.
And so exactly. I think initially I wanted to blame everything on my parents. Like I was like, I'm an adult child and it's their fucking fault. And I probably spent 2 years in that place. Like I was all about it being my mom's fault. And then it was just like, no, you know what? Like it took a while for me to absorb the fact that like, it's about how we react and not in a, I'm going to choose how to react, but like, what did we do in response to what was happening around us or what someone said to us? And like, where did that go? And why did it go there? Like, I feel like there's things I did because I was neurodivergent. There's things that I did because I was in an alcoholic household, and there were things that just are all combined and go together.
So how have you been treating it? Where do you feel like improvements have been made?
I think that the biggest thing that has helped is realizing that like it's not about anything other for me. It's not about anything else right now for me. Then it's my job to figure out how I can stay regulated. I was listening to another podcast today, like on my drive home, and it was they were talking about like how moving is a nightmare, and it's especially a nightmare for autistic people. And someone said, regulating yourself is your full-time job. Like, because the world is going to throw things at you. You're going to have to deal with things. So like your job is when you're at home and when you're in control of that, like do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself and regulate yourself. And I think that's so different than self-care. Like it's great if I'm eating well and exercising and making my bed every day and drinking enough water and going to meetings and all that. But like, it's also okay if I need to completely dissociate for 2 hours and scroll on my phone, because that's regulating me. Like I'm, it does regulate me. It does help my nervous system calm down. So like, I don't really, drink unless it's like totally a social thing. Like I'm hanging out with really friends and it's like a happy occasion, where it used to be like, I would have a drink at the end of a stressful day. That doesn't help me regulate. I will put on my shoes and go for a walk if nothing else is working. I just transitioned from doing like, I had an okay therapist, but it was kind of just, I could have just talked into my phone, you know, like it.
ChatGPT would be more efficient.
Probably, but it was good. Like I had someone to listen to me once a week, but now I have a therapist who does like IFS and parts work and somatic work and is giving me things to think about and giving me like work to do. And that's my job. Like that's my job, so that I can be a good mom and I can do a good job at my job. And I'm going through a divorce right now. And like, it's a lot to handle and I have to like take care of myself. So there, it's not like a way to treat it, you know?
It's like life hacks. Yeah.
It's like figuring out what calms my nervous system and what doesn't. And that takes some trial and error. So, you know, it's really easy to make mistakes, and then just being gentle with myself when I make mistakes or make a bad choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
It fucking snowballs. Like, I don't know about you, but like yesterday I was like, I really need to like take a shower. And then I didn't, because a contractor was coming and I didn't want to inconvenience him. And then I didn't eat because there was someone in my house. And like, I can't eat when there's a stranger in my house. I don't know. And then the whole day, like it just snowballed. Everything got worse. And then I didn't have fucking Wi-Fi, and I was like, my life is ending. And I was like, but if I walk back and see like there are things I could have done to stay regulated, and it would have, I could have handled that Wi-Fi problem without being like, Andrea's gonna be so mad at me. This book that somebody recommended to me called The Way to Integrity, have you heard about that? I've never heard of it. It's really good. But she talks about this concept of walking back the cat. And it's like when something happens that like triggers you, or you find yourself like, oh, I wish I, like, how did I get in this situation? Like, how did I end up here? And it's like this process of going like, what happened before that? And what happened before that? And until you get to the point where like, there's something that you did or didn't do where you stepped outside of your integrity, like you weren't being true to yourself. You abandoned yourself in that moment. And then it's like your brain goes, well, I guess we're fucking abandoning ourselves today. And then you just keep going.
So true. Anything else you want to share related to this that we didn't talk about?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that I know I do this and I hear other people do this, is trying to pick apart like what part of, and I did this in the beginning of my time in the group. And now I don't do this as much because I feel like it doesn't matter. I would pick apart, what's my ACA? Like, what's my, is ACA causing this? Or is my trauma causing this? Or is this thing that happened to me when I was 7 causing this? Or is it my autism that's causing this, or my ADHD? And it's like, I think we just have to somehow resolve that like all of that is part of us, and it's all okay. Like, we're not gonna make any of it go away. So does it matter? I don't know that it matters, you know?
My therapist's always like, well, what if you never figure it out?
Right.
You know? And like, why does it matter?
Right. Because even if you're like, oh, it's my ADHD.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if I take treatment for ADHD, is that problem going to go away?
Yeah.
probably not. You'll just handle it in a different way, or it might be more manageable, but like, I don't know. I just think our core job is to, I mean, it sounds simple, but it's fucking really hard. It's just like to take good care of ourselves. Like, that's where the reparenting comes in and all that. It's like all the ways we can take care of ourselves and then do that. And then like reparenting was really great for me for a while. And then I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore. Maybe I'll pick it up again later. But like trying so hard to figure it out, I think is just maybe not where it's at.
No, I agree. But it's what we do. It's all about control, I think. And almost a way to like keep us from healing if we're like so fixated on figuring it out rather than like just doing what we need to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like when I was in the space where I'm like, oh, this is all because of my mom. This is all because my mom drank. And I'm like, you know what? My mom still drinks and she's going to drink till the day she dies. So are we going to live here? Like,
no, but I think it's important to feel that at some point. Like, all of that's healthy and normal, you know? But then at a certain point, it's like, all right, shit or get off the pot.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com.